Minnesota Vikings fans, welcome back to the Purple People Eaters edition, of the Living in Loserville podcast. And, you know, that Living in Loserville thing, a lot of people take offense to it. We're not just this podcast that does negative stuff and 18 minutes of rant every episode. It's just reality. It's just reality, folks. And the sooner you just deal with it, the sooner you can, well, deal with it, right? Anyway, we are back to talk some purple, some Vikings football. Obviously coming off just a heartbreaking loss on the road to Seattle, which is just kind of, they're a divisional opponent, at least according to the NFL. But there's no two, it's just one, and it's always in Seattle. They almost got the frickin' job done. Just heartbreaking. You know, me and my co-host Aaron were just breaking down probably eight different things that could have changed the course of this game. And that's what a lot of these games come down to, no doubt about it. So we're going to talk about the good and the bad. I mean, that's the thing, offensively and defensively. You can look at this game and see the good. I mean, there is a whole lot of it. A lot of the positivities, considering it's another loss, and the Vikes are 1-4. Something to kind of keep in mind, not for, oh, we're going to go to the playoffs, but the future of the franchise in this group of guys that we got and what can be added, what can be improved with the young players and whatnot. Three teams that are unbeaten. We could have beaten, could have, would have, should have, but could have beaten two of them. So the schedule was very tough through five games, 1-4, like I said, 2-3 easy. You can make the argument 3-2, but hey, that's just an argument. Week 1-2, you couldn't. You know, we lost those games. Offense the second week, defense the first week. But there are plenty of positives. Of course, we got to talk about the negatives, but it's an interesting one. It was an interesting one, no doubt about it. If you weren't a fan of either side, you were like, wow, what a fun game, man. Holy, momentum switches all over the field and whatnot. Of course, Wilson with the clutch, well, what was it, three or four third downs and then two fourth downs on that drive, that 4th and 10, man. Ouch, ouch. Anyway, so we're going to break the game down. Of course, we're going to look to next week against Atlanta. We are favored to win that game. I feel pretty good about that game. I'm wondering, though, where our guy Delvin Cook is as far as will he be healthy. It is a groin. When you hear hamstring, when you hear groin, when you hear toe or foot, and when it comes to a skilled player, it always kind of makes you go, oh, shit, here we go. But we're going to jump into this and just think, we're not going to have a segment this week. But next week, there's going to be a bye, right? But Gopher football is back, too. And so we keep it purple all the way to the end. Then we have a short Gopher segment. So I'm excited for that, just being a Minnesota football fan. And, hey, odds are we're not going to be 1-4. Just kidding. But anyway, yeah, we're going to get to all this good stuff in just a moment. If this is your first time listening to this Vikings podcast, welcome. It streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeadoperadio. However, you don't have to go to Blog Talk and download the show there or listen to it in the browser to find the Purple People Eaters podcast. You can find it under the Rope a Dope Radio podcast at Apple Podcast, iHeartRadio, Player FM, TuneIn, Stitcher, really all across the board. We're also part of the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network, which can be found everywhere, including Spotify, if you listen to it on Spotify there. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com. It's football, basketball, baseball, boxing, everything in between. And one more thing before we start breaking down yet another heartbreaker. I got something for you. If you're thinking about cutting the cord, maybe you have, you're not quite happy. It's called AT&T TV Now. It's live streaming cable. They have the 7-day free trial. There's no annual contract. The plan starts as low as $55 a month. You can stream it anywhere. They have the cloud DVR. Right now, if you sign up, you get a 30-day free trial of HBO Max. Here's another layer real quick. if you get the Max package, it already includes HBO Max plus a one free month. Plus a one free month. That's what I just said. Plus a one free month. I'll just say it like that. Of Showtime. That's normally $11 a month. It's called AT&T TV Now. Like I said, live streaming cable. Okay. Well, I'm going to go ahead and bring in my co-host, Aaron. And, you know, we talked about before this season, well, not even before the season started, although I guess that would be in April. We talked about how, what do we get, like, when we get rid of our top four corners, we knew a couple of them were going to leave. But, you know, when we make the Diggs trade and don't improve the offensive line in the process, is this a retooling? We both agreed that it's not a full rebuild because we wouldn't have signed some players. We also have a damn good core. But the retooling now, it really seems evident, and it's kind of just playing out how we expected, except obviously some of these tight games. We won more of the tight games last year than we did this year, but it really feels like, you know, something we talked about the offseason, and then even that first week we had that discussion about retooling, Aaron, and what our record would be. And it really feels like the retool and the positivity going into next year is going to happen. I mean, if you look at the stretch of games we've had and what we have left on the schedule, it feels like in the weirdest way, even if we have four or six or even, well, especially if we're 8-8 or something like that, the momentum going into next season with the same things that we have to improve, it's really playing out strangely like a complete retool, not a rebuild, but not going for the playoffs per se.
Yeah, I mean, I'm coming in hot after you talked me off the ledge with Cousins before the show. And yeah, I mean, it looks like we are headed in a good direction, not only for the rest of this season, but for next season. You know, some people don't want to win a lot more games because they want to get higher draft picks and so on. And I'm not down with that, much, but it's hard to tell somebody to go lose a game. And so I feel like we got a lot of guys on the mend, a lot of guys down who presumably will be back next year. And the defense kind of seems to coalesce a little bit better, as long as everybody stays in place. And we're going to lose a few people, I suppose, to free agency and whatnot. But you could, add a couple more at the draft and free agency as well. So I think, yeah, it's trending forward. It's going to be a rough, rest of this year. But I think, there's a lot of good things coming up with the teams we have on schedule. The Bears, the Lions, haven't seen them yet. So I think we'll get some wins here. Maybe the attitude and the feeling about this team will improve.
And just another layer here, Aaron. Do you think that's why they didn't go out and make a guard move or a corner move? Because they kind of knew what they had, and they said, well, dude, we're just going to end up having to do that next year anyway. Why don't we just wait? What are your thoughts on that? Because it's kind of like, I suppose we could just pick up a veteran corner next year, and we could make a trade to get a guard next year with a team that's ready to go, and then we've already weaned out the cornerbacks.
Well, I think they were willing to take their lumps at the cornerback position. I think they went into the season thinking that, but they also thought they'd have Hunter. They also thought they'd have Pierce, and they also thought they'd have Barr to kind of help in that transition with the corners. I think maybe they kept Harris around for one more season just to kind of help in that back end because of that. But I think now I'm not so worried about the corner, like getting a veteran corner again, although you were right about this year. I'm more worried about a guard. We draft guys low in the draft. Samia's not working out. And I was on the Samia bandwagon pretty heavily because I just didn't see him playing that terribly last year in the spot duty that he got. He played pretty well, but he's just a train wreck this year. And I can't really put my finger on why, unless he was never that good or last year was smoke and mirrors or something happened in the offseason. Who knows? But he's not playing well at all, yet we keep marching him out there. We got other guards we could try, waiting for Elflein to get back. Who would have thought that we would be pining for Pat Elflein? But here we are in that position. said, yeah, I'm more worried about the guard position and the offensive line in general. Riley Reiff's going to have to make a decision at the end of the season. So I think a whole offensive line thing, as it's been for the last 3 or 4 years, really needs to be dealt with again this offseason in a much more serious way.
Yeah, definitely. Both guard positions need to be upgraded. However you do it, they got to do it. And we said, well, we got about 5 of them, so let's try another one then. You know, all right, Samia's not working out. I was high on him too. I'm right there with you. I really felt he came from a great system, and he's a big guy, and he's mobile and all that. I was drinking the Kool-Aid too, and we don't know until he actually gets extended time. But that is a good point. He didn't look lost last year in limited play. But, yeah, it's just and you're right about the corners per se for next year. I think it's just – well, then we can just go get one is what I meant. Like, if we need one, then we can go get one. And I liked how you added the Harris point, too. Like, well, that's – we didn't give him a long-term deal, did we? You know what I mean? We had plenty of time to do it, and we didn't. So there's something there, too. So, yeah, it's just interesting how that has played out so far. As far as the game, though, playing out, it was definitely a game of momentum. Back and forth, well, not back and forth, one-sided, then one-sided, then one-sided, then one-sided is actually what it was. Like, whoa, what the hell just happened? So first quarter, looking good offensively and defensively. I noticed the amount of pressure or – and not just sacks. I think we had 3 in the first half and 4 overall. But the pressure to adjust the pass, to get rid of the ball – or just get a hit on him. That was key, and it's not the easiest thing to do with Wilson. So that's a positive, no doubt about it. And on offense, you know, Irv Smith, hey, that's right, he's on the squad. 23-yard catch early, a nice throw and catch. The ball was low and where it needed to be, and Irv Smith made a nice catch for a first down. You're like, hey, all right, in that opening drive, 12 plays, 77 yards. I think it was back-to-back runs by Cook at the end, obviously the last one being a touchdown. But there was 2 third-down conversions, 1 third and 11, 1 third and 7. There was a BB sighting for 3rd and 11, and then Irv Smith made another catch on the 3rd and 7. So you're like, hey, we're getting Irv the ball. We just saw BB for a 3rd and 11. Wow, okay, this is pretty nice. And I think there was – actually, I think on that drive there was a 4th and short to Jefferson too. But either way, the defense did give up some plays, but they got a hit, I believe, on second – or a sack on 2nd down, which forced a 3rd and long, I believe. It was an 8-play drive, but they forced the punt with the sack. So that was really key. Vikings come down and get some points. I think we started at like the 2 or 3 yard line. By the way, their punter is good. My God. I think it was the 2nd or 3rd yard line we started that drive. 17-play drive, 10 minutes. So that's 12 and 17. We haven't seen much of that. They did get some points out of it. And I liked how the 3rd and 17 play, instead of trying to get some one big play, we dumped it off short and we got in field position. And I know that's boring or whatever, but that's the difference between points. Because it's 3rd and 7, we're not going to go for it on 4th and 17 if we try to go deep there. So I really like that. It's 10-0. You're feeling pretty good. And then we add another 11-play drive. A 137 left is something that now we've done at the end of halves this season really, really well. And that started at like the 15-yard line too. 11-play, 57-yard feeling. There was a deep shot there. The corner made a good play, but that almost was a touchdown there. He did get a nice pickup, though, on that. It's 13-0. We're seeing more shotgun, right? More shotgun, which is nice when you have a line like us for pass protection. In the short passing, Aaron, I thought those two keys beyond the extending these drives, and then, of course, the defense getting pressure, getting sacks, and getting hit. All of was well in the first half at 13-0.
Yeah, all was well. Defense is what I like to focus on because you started to see pressure coming there. You got a sack by Odenigbo, a sack by Wilson, sack by Lynch. Ngakoue got a sack. You started to see some line pressure. I think a lot of that has to do with Zimmer trying to figure out a way to get pressure, and that was successful. You also put two deep safeties to help out with Russell and not letting anything go deep on him. I think that frustrated Russell Wilson a little bit in the first half. Couldn't get the ball where he wanted, was in zone a little bit more than we usually are. And I think that kind of threw Wilson for a loop. And it worked out to be a pretty good defensive game plan. And you got to kind of like Zimmer's game plan on the game. It seems like you put a lot of time into it because it seemed to work out and be quite successful. Offensively, you would have wanted a few more points. But like you said, we were moving the ball, a couple fourth and ones, taking care of their Cook on the outside in the flat, on the screens. Cook was running well. Everything seemed to be going good. You would want a little better pass protection, as we always do, but enough where Kirk could get the ball out where he wanted it. Maybe a little bit more Jefferson would have helped, but overall, feeling good at half.
Yeah, and even in that shotgun, I noticed we did a couple of play action, quick little plays too, where, you know, people kind of forget that you can. There's systems, especially in college, that do the play action off of a shotgun. It's just normally it's a short shotgun. You know what I mean? And it's a different system, but you can still do. I remember the Niners in the 80s in the West Coast system, they would use that. Of course, they had Roger Craig, but hey, Dalvin Cook's pretty damn good. So I did like what I see out of there. The zone was really key. The safety's deep. I do like that you pointed that out. That made it. You could see they actually went to the shot a couple of times during the broadcast, kind of seeing what Wilson was seeing. And it was like, okay, dude, the combination of pressure and good coverage. Wow. And like you said, scheme. That was nice. Both teams went three and out to start the third quarter. Seattle, kind of a quick, I think it was like three straight completions, a big play in there. And next thing you know, it's 13-7. Okay, no big deal. We get the ball back. Samia got trucked twice, I think, in two separate drives and a penalty in there. Cook gets injured, groin injury, which, like I said, I still am a little worried about that because he said he went in to try it again. He said he couldn't help his team when he went back in. I wouldn't have let him back in, but hey, you know, he's obviously trying to play. But then two back-to-back turnovers. Cousins has a fumble on the release. I think it was just two completions later. One, I think, was deep, 14-13. And then Cousins with the pick rolling out, which a play that probably would have went pretty far, or at least the first down. But he just floated it a little. Of course, he needed to float it, but he didn't put the right oomph of what it needed. And oomph is the wrong thing. It was more of a finesse pass that he didn't get over the top. It was a mistake, especially on back-to-back turnovers, just giving the short field. Now, I'll say that, what was it, A.J. Wright or whatever, he made a hell of a play. He jumped in the air and one-handed it. But still, it's a mistake regardless. If anything, just throw it higher because actually there wasn't a safety sneaking up just yet. So you actually did have some room to overthrow it, and that would have been a better situation there. And then when you make mistakes, whether, like I said, I don't blame the first fumble. I think that's offensive line, but clearly the pick was. And when you make mistakes, they get compounded a lot of times in the NFL, and that's exactly what happened. Like I said, a couple of completions later, it's 14-13. Now all of a sudden, literally one run, 29 yards by Carson. And somehow Harry just lets him run him over. He doesn't even grab his legs, unfortunately. Zimmer did say he was going for the ball or whatever. But next thing you know, it's 21-13 at the 8:02 mark. And now you're like, okay, what the fuck just happened? That's literally 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 plays. And only really one on the defense as far as because they were going to score. It's just a matter of what they were going to score. Only one was just the defense alone giving up a drive. That's tough, 21-13, just like that.
Yeah, what the fuck just happened is right. You get the two turnovers, and then the defense doesn't do you any favors and gives up touchdowns. Metcalf gets the one to make it 14-13. And then you go ahead, and that one run for 29 yards by Carson. It was very clear that Harrison Smith was going for the ball. Now, I don't know why he thought he could get the ball there, but, you know, maybe he found himself in a unfortunate position and tried to make the best out of it, but ended up getting discarded, and in walks Carson to make it 21-13. And you're thinking to yourself, okay, here we go again. Why is it always this, you know, living in Loserville again, always coming at you with this stuff. But then again, you know, the offense comes back off the ropes and you get a 12-play drive. One of the better drives I've seen in a long time, ending with Thielen for a touchdown to make it 21-19. And you're starting to think, well, that was a nice response. Things are going well. Let's go back to what we did on defense and let's let the ball, you know, control the ball, which the offense did very well for the game. And Russell Wilson made the most of his very few snaps. And now we find ourselves in a position. We're up again. And we can
hold on. 2-point conversion, 21-19. What happened there? We're down 21-19. You go for a 2-point conversion. I'm old school. You go for the 2 points when you need the 2 points.
All right. So that's one of these decisions that we'll probably talk about later in the game. I was fine with the 2 points. I know that's what the book says. I don't know. I've never seen the book. You know, you go here, you don't go there, you know, with 6 minutes on the clock, you know, pull up your socks and go for two. And I don't know all the analytics of that as far as gameplay goes, but I'm kind of in the same boat as you, is you go for it when you need it. But I mean, coaches are getting out there. A lot of people going on fourth down now, a lot of people going for two in times when you wouldn't see them with a full house. So, you know, I didn't have a problem with it at the time and I don't regret it. It would have been nice to make
the play call. I don't agree with going for it. The play call is ridiculous.
It was a horrible play call, just as far as percentages go. And the players that you have, you can't come up. Now, here's the defense to this, is that they would have never saw it coming because we didn't see it coming. A quarterback draw to Kirk Cousins. I mean, that's a surprising play to us and I'm sure to the Seattle Seahawks. Probably had to do with execution, but I can kind of see where your head's at for calling that play. But it's a little important part of the game here. You're trying to keep momentum. You've got it back to your side again in a game which had swings of momentum. Yes. You might want to try to, you know, get somebody on the outside or maybe a pass of some sort. But no, nobody liked the play call, but I can kind of see why he may have called it.
Well, and besides the defensive end and the linebacker, they knew because they were in position. But yeah, I hear you as far as the surprise element. And the defensive end did make a good play. He went back and read it. It looked like it was open. It did look like it was open there for a second. There was open. And then when he took a step forward, because you got to – I don't know. The Tebow pass doesn't necessarily work in the NFL much. It still works in college where – you know, you fake like you're going to run and then you dump over or something. But I'd rather do that than have Cousins running that play. I mean, it's open, but then it closed really quick. So I just
– Right.
And he has to take 3 steps back. So he's not on – it's not 2 yards. You have to go about 4 or 5 yards. So I just – at that point, it's not do or die. You don't need the field goal. And when you look at it, when you add it up, 21-20 – you get a touchdown. Then if we would have just kicked the field goal, they couldn't have won anyway. So I don't mind them going on fourth down. We'll talk a little bit about that. But I just don't like the play call. However, the defense held on the next drive. They had a 7-play drive, and that was that Moore almost made a great catch in the end zone, that deep shot. Moore almost caught that ball, but he did not. They had to punt. And then, and speaking of the damn punter again, Aaron, 3-yard line, 15 plays though, 97 yards, 8 minute long. Thielen touchdown again. He made that little crafty move to get open. That was pretty sweet. 26-21 on that drive, mostly shotgun to avoid the pressure. Mattson had a 20-yard run. That Ham had a great block on Wagner on the second level. Jefferson had a nice crossing route, another first down run from Mattson later in that, and then obviously Thielen. 26-21, feeling pretty good. The defense jumps off sides because we got to do that once, right, Aaron? We got to do that once a game. But then Wilson comes up with an interception on a big play with about 6 minutes left of the game, 50-yard line. Oh, my God, is this going to happen? Are we going to do this?
Well, you wanted that to seal the game. You go and you make a 15-play drive for 97 yards, get an interception, think you can eat the clock. We've been running the ball, probably the best I've seen us run the ball this season. And you're thinking, okay, we're still in great shape here. Eat the clock, maybe score, put this thing away. And what a great interception by Wilson. I mean, the guy went out of bounds. He said, okay, came back in, got the ball. Great play by him. He had some good plays. Everybody says he had a lot of great plays. I think he had some pretty decent plays in this game. He had one bad play at the goal line to Disley pass. He fell down, tripped over his own feet or whatever. But, you know, you get the interception and you're thinking, you know, this one's over. But like I said, here's where the confidence starts to come in and the Viking lore and the Kirk Cousins talk and all the stuff starts to meld into your mind as to what could possibly go wrong at this situation. And we move on to the next drive on offense where they just kind of fourth and one. Where do you want to start with this? I mean, there's questions everywhere. Is it a good play call? Did he miss the hole? Zimmer should have did this, should have kicked the field goal. My position is I'm absolutely in line with Zimmer on most of the decisions in this game. I wish they would have worked out, but your take on the run play, I mean, you sent me a text and I kind of misread what you were trying to say in that text. But as soon as I figured out your point, it's pretty hard to deny a huge hole out to the right.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind the play call whatsoever. Now, if we wouldn't have gone for the two and it was a different, you know, we had an extra point, then you go, fuck, you could put this out of reach by nine. Well, maybe I'd think about it, but still, it's Vikings lore, like you said, right? You still got to snap the fucking ball. We missed a goddamn 26-yarder about 4 years ago, right? Against, who are we talking about? Seattle in the playoffs. We could have went to the second round. So I guess I'd be more willing to go for the field goal if we hadn't gone for the 2-point and just gotten the extra point. This year, knock on wood, we're good at extra points. But we've even had struggles with that extra points in the last couple of years. But in that position, knowing that it's still that score, I 100% believe in going for it on fourth and inches. Now, I guess you could say, well, don't run directly behind Samia, you know? But if Samia, there's two plays that fucked up there, two players. Samia not blocking good enough, even if a half a second more, probably a couple of milliseconds more, not even a half a second, right? He just holds his guy a little bit more and not literally holding him because he does that too. And he scoots in there. It's a first. Yeah. It's a first down. The game is done because people are like, no, they still had a timeout. Dude, the clock is running when we get the first down. So they'd have to kill the timeout. It's first down still, though. So the game's over. The game is over. We could just knee, you know. So I think it was a great call to go for it. And like you said, I mean, maybe there's one other game that Cook went for 180 this year, but it felt like as a team, they were, I mean, you're right. We were running the shit out of the ball, dude. So yeah, I think it was a great play call and two players on that play made a mistake. And that's what that play came down to. And so, yeah, I'm all for it. I don't care about the field goal thing. I think it was a good call, man. You can end the game. Whereas you're still not ending the game for sure if you score a field goal, right?
Yeah, there it is. You can end the game. Like you said, you've been running the ball well. Madison's been playing really, really well. So you can end this game and not give the ball back to Wilson. All this second guessing from the couch is a little bit tough to take when I think the whole world was like, yeah, go for it. You had gone for it previously.
Yeah.
You had picked up the fourth downs. You were moving the ball. Everything was going in your direction. I think if you would have kicked the field goal and then Wilson comes back, you know, ties the game up with a 2-point conversion, yeah, everybody's going to be screaming at Zimmer for not trying to put the game away. It's 50-50, you know, you say tomato, I say tomato on that. could go either way. And I think Zimmer made the right call at the right time. And I would make that call 100 out of 100 times with the way that game was shaping up. I just don't understand a lot of the Monday morning quarterbacks. Yes, it's a natural thing to do, but in such an obvious, you know, you could do this or you could do that. Both add and subtract the same amount of variables. You're going to have to make a decision. He made a decision. They stood behind the decision. It just wasn't executed well. I thought it was a decent play call. You know, everything was there to win that game. And you make that first down, you win that game. Russell stays on the bench. End of story. I think you do that 100 out of 100 times.
I couldn't agree more with you. And I liked how you preferenced it by saying in that moment, in that game, how it was going. Because, of course, 2 years ago when the Bears defense, we couldn't do a fucking thing on them. Sure. You know, sure. Now I'm thinking about other stuff, but that wasn't the case. That's not what was.
And Chris,
going
how
on.
Many times have we said you need 1 yard? Exactly. You know, 1 yard.
And not even game. Right. We're yeah. talking inches. You know.
Exactly.
We're talking feet.
We said this for the all time that we've done this podcast. When it comes down to that 1 yard to win a game, or to maybe extend it, or do whatever in situations like that, you get the feel of the game, you understand it. And I think everybody would have been throwing their hats if they would have tried to kick that field goal because, one, Dan Bailey is not 100% in field goals, all right? We've had problems with kickers. This is the Minnesota Vikings, okay? So
even
just
the snap
could line up. Exactly.
Even the fucking snap.
Line up and automatically make a field goal right. is preposterous. You know,
yeah.
You go for it. You try to win the game.
Yeah, I'd like to see the percentage analytically of those fourth and inches in kicking a field goal over the last 10 years or something like that. But it was freaking heartbreaking. 39.28. Talk about field position. Talk about rushing first downs. 12 of them, Aaron. They were 0 of 7 on third down. We had a lot of third downs. We were 6 of 14, but 0 of 7. But then they were 2 of 2 in the key fourth downs, and both of them came on the last drive. And it felt like, yeah, this is going to happen. I don't care if it's a 6-fucking-yard line. It's going to fucking happen. But I did get my hopes up minorly, one, because of the pressure I was seeing. They were like, fuck it, dude, we're going to blitz, you know? And I thought, yep, let's do it because it's Wilson, dude. You got to do something. He's going to pick you apart. And two, that once the 4th and 10 play happened, though, I knew it was a wrap. I understand where they're at on the field. I understand they wore it all the way down to 4th down and goal and for the game and all that. But once they didn't get that 4th and 10, it was a wrap. Take us through that play with the young corner who was in prime position and probably learned a lot. Unfortunately, you know, we're watching the game going, what the fuck? But he probably can take that with him.
Yeah, but before I do that, let's go back to the first play of that drive. Russell breaks off like 25 yards on the ground there. That, I think, was almost a bigger play than that 4th and 10. You pick that up, you're in the shadow of your own goal, and this defense has a tendency to give up the middle runs to quarterbacks. Particularly, Russell knows exactly what to do in that position, and he did it. And I was like, ah, you know, there goes a couple minutes. You know, you're going to have a hard time recovering from that play. Now, to go on to Dantzler in the 4th and 10, my position is that Dantzler underestimated DK Metcalf. I think he thought that ball was too high and he was setting up for an interception. And you look at him in the replay, it's the only thing that makes sense. He was actually had his hands out like he was getting ready to catch the ball. He just didn't know that DK Metcalf is a freak athlete and can get up there and get it. There's not many players in this league that can go up and make that. So, yeah, Dantzler probably should have played the body and not the ball, but I think he made a judgment call and just kind of picked the wrong one, rookie corner. You know, you're going to have to let him take his lumps, and I think that was one of the big lumps there. I think he underestimated how high Metcalf could get up and get that ball because he really went up there, and I think Metcalf's like 6'4". And, you know, I think in that position, it's kind of hard to not think that was an overthrow. But, I mean,
but
Russell didn't think it was an overthrow.
How's he going to get it? If it's too high, how's he going
to
get it?
Because the ball was kind of arcing to where if Metcalf didn't get that ball, it would have fell right into Dantzler's hands because he set himself up for it. Does that make sense?
Sure, I see what you're saying. I see.
Like, I think he just made a bad rookie judgment call, and, you know, I hope that he learns from it.
And the key thing is he was in position. And that's half the battle, right? Being in position. Or more than half the battle, right? Really. But yeah, after that, once he got the fourth and 10, I knew it was writing on the wall, even though it did come down to the fourth down again. But I knew it was writing on the wall. It's so crazy that they didn't get a third down the whole game, 0-7, and 2-for-2 on those two plays. And obviously, Wilson makes a perfect, just barely fitted in there play. There was something went wrong. Someone, I forgot what Zimmer said, but someone ran into each other, and it was actually the guy that was coming late to the play was just trying to cover up the play. But a great pass. And talk about the defensive end who probably could have, not about sacking him because it's hard to sack him, but he could have made that play even harder on Wilson. And that's just those little things that you watch the replay and go, oh, my God.
Well, you're right. I mean, you said it's hard to sack Wilson, right? So you got to be tentative when you rush him. And what I think happened probably was you saw the defense was set up. I actually watched JT O'Sullivan kind of broke down that play. And you had on the other side, you had a little guy from Kansas State coming from that side, Tyler Lockett. And he was coming on a crosser, and Metcalf was coming on the other crosser. And you had Dantzler back dealing with Lockett. But then Lockett came across, and he switched off in about the center of that play in the middle of the field in the end zone. He switched off to cover Lockett, and Metcalf kind of kept going, which forced Harris to come down and cover him, which was a little too late. Zimmer said it was Dantzler's assignment to follow Metcalf, and he actually switched off, which was a big problem. But when you talk about Odenigbo and you're coming in on Wilson, I have a feeling that Wilson probably did a little shake or something to indicate to Odenigbo that he possibly might run, which caused Odenigbo to hold up a little bit just before impact or just before, you know, a full rush, which gave Russell Wilson the time to make that pass. It was probably a genius move by Russell, some kind of eye contact or a shoulder shake or something to cause him to just kind of hold up a little bit, give him just enough time to slip that ball into Metcalf. Great play by Wilson. Probably should have went full steam for Odenigbo, but you know, that's how it worked out. And it was such a thing of inches. Like you said, there's like three or four instances in this game where it was literally inches. It was the interception, a little bit higher. You get that into Jefferson. A little more coming on the rush. He would have probably ended that with a bad pass by Wilson. And then you got Dantzler, you know, misjudging the fourth and 10. These are little plays that allowed the Seattle Seahawks to win. But, you know, it's also what you get when you have a quarterback the caliber of Russell Wilson.
Both teams had 11 drives, 83-52. When it comes to the play count, that was one of those games that you just don't, you generally don't lose. The record is like a 78% or something analytically. It's pretty crazy. Anything else from this game before we start to look at, man, how's Cook start to kind of preview this game with Atlanta? We did make a couple of little minor moves. Hercules got waived, but he may be on the practice squad. I haven't jumped back to see. I know they're leaving a spot for him. But anything else that you want to talk about when it comes to this game before we start to look ahead? Because, man, I really hope Cook's okay.
Yeah, I just wanted to see if you noticed that the defensive line, which I've kind of had a bone with here over the last few weeks about not getting any sort of pressure and still hasn't really improved. But then you stick the rookie James Lynch in his first play, he gets a sack. In the second play, he creates a little bit of havoc. I'm starting to wonder, why hasn't this guy seen the field a little bit earlier? And why is he not playing on a regular rotation? You've seen what you have in Shamar Stephen and Jaleel Johnson. And it's nothing impressive, but then you get this kid coming out. Now, maybe we'll see more of him against Atlanta, and we certainly should. But if we don't, that's going to be pretty telling about what might be going on with that defensive line.
Yeah, I mean, that was that was it was nice to see. Like, and maybe he's been showing something in practice, but also showing some negatives, and that's why he didn't get, you know, on the field or whatever. But if he's not in the rotation, why not? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. Just like we're saying, hey, if you got five guards, then go to the next one. Like, there's a guy that has more playing time than Samia. Well, here's a play. We've gotten. I like how you put that. We've already seen what we got. Why don't we see what we got with these youngsters? So I really hope that does happen, because I think that is, you know, just depth in general, or another guy to put next to Pierce. It's really all about next year in many ways, even though, like, we both think we think this is a good enough team not to only win four games.
Yeah, and, you know, this game with Atlanta coming up, is this like a quote-unquote trap game? I mean, I know we're 1-4, so that's kind of a preposterous assumption. But a lot of people think we're going to easily win this one, but we don't know Cook. I mean, he's probably out until Green Bay at the earliest, so that's 2 weeks. You know, Madison can handle the rock. We still have problems in pass protection. And, you know, I think running the ball, Samia, is pretty effective, but pass protection is just no way. It's a home game, Chris, and, you know, it's hard to really get behind anything on this team, because we just don't know how players are going to perform. You know, the mainstays, Thielen, Bradbury's been pretty good. Reef has played his best season so far, which is kind of shocking. And yeah, it's hard
like
to tell
he
what you're going to get.
Fire lit under his ass or something. Like, hey, we're going to cut your money. Really? Oh, shit. Okay, my bad. He's playing great.
And at least it's a home game. And like you said, after Atlanta in the bye in Green Bay, things really start to lighten up. But, you know, back to this Atlanta game.
Yeah, and, you know, I agree with you as far as, you know, we probably won't see him. Hopefully we see Cook November 1st when we play Green Bay. Because I do kind of feel like, hey, I mean, we are 1-4. We know that there have been tight games and all, and we know we've played three undefeated teams and all that's great. But especially now that we've signed him to a long-term deal, there's no point in, you know, yeah, he's not the same, but you're right. The backup is good, and Boone's pretty good too. And right now they're run blocking, besides Samia, they're run blocking pretty damn well. Delvin Cook questionable. No surprise there. Looking at the injury report, CJ Ham questionable. Jaleel Johnson questionable. Oh, well, okay. We may see more of our guy here. Garrett Bradbury is questionable, although I think he's going to be okay. I did see some tweets lately from some local media talking about it, but it's Wednesday, so who really knows about that? The over-under set at 54.5. The Vikings are a four-point favorite. After all, Atlanta hasn't won a game, and their coach is gone now. Let's see. They played Carolina 23-16, got pretty much handled by Green Bay, lost a really close game they should have won against the Bears 30-26, lost 40-39 to the Cowboys, and 38-25 in a game that felt closer. There was a cancel game for them too. So they've been in some close games, all losses. Man, I really hope that they don't, you know, all of a sudden get the feeling. What do they got out? They actually have Jared out at D tackle. He's pretty good. Neal, the safety, he's pretty good. Fowler, another. Okay, so their defensive line is a little banged up with three questionables, and I know two of them do have, you know, a fair amount of playing time. Neither side defensively, stat-wise, even though we have seen improvement, are doing well. 30.4 and 32.2. You know, more than likely, it's going to be an up-and-down affair to an extent anyway. They are giving up 345. I repeat, 345 through the air. Ouch. The Vikings averaging 160 on the ground. Man, that is – that's like music to my ears. If we could be 3-2 right now, and four, even if we were 3-3, like we said after the first six games, that would have been wonderful. But I digress. How do you see this one playing out? I mean, it feels like the Vikings are going to get the W here.
I mean, after all those stats, it sounds like a great opportunity for a win. But then you coach is gone. That's either going to play one of two ways. You're going to have a deflated team or an extra energized team. One of the two. I probably say that the Vikings are probably going to come out pretty strong. It's a home game. They've been a lot of road games early. So I like the Vikings to win this game. I don't think it's going to be a walk in the park, though. I think it's probably going to be a lot of twists and turns. You know, come to think of it, we probably are Atlanta's Seattle. You know what I mean? Like, we've had, you know, their number the last few years when we played them. And, you know, I like the Vikings this, but it's tentative to me. Like, it could go either way, but if, you know, gun to my head, I'm going to say probably Vikings win something around 23-17. Probably a good game by Jefferson and Thielen. And I think Madison and Boone will do a good job running the ball. As long as you keep the turnovers to a minimum, I think you win this game by 6, 5, 6, 4, something like that. The line's probably pretty good on this one.
Yeah, I got a 30-23 Vikings getting the W. And I, you know, although I agreed with the way you put the trap game thing, as far as it's not a true trap game, but it is a trap game when it comes to being in the top five worst record. So, I mean, we really need an L in this one, Aaron, if truth be told.
Well, you threw me for a loop there. Well, can you explain why we might need an L? I mean,
no, I mean, it's a joke.
Oh, okay.
You know, they're right. They haven't won a game, so we're in a battle with them. And sure. So if we lost the head-to-head game, hey, that gives us a chance to be the worst five and get a top five pick, is my point. And then magically trade up a bunch of first rounders. Actually, real quick.
Okay.
Well, you know what? That's a different discussion that we'll save. And it does feel like we've already put a couple of these topics on the back burner, because it does feel like we're going to need some segments down the stretch of this season to add, to give people content, to give people something to think about that's important for next year. So I'll stop at this little metaphor of being top five and would you, how much you'd be willing to give away of the future to get the number one pick. But we'll save that, because it is kind of late in the show. But yeah, that was just a joke. It was a, hey, let's lose these games. This is a key game to lose because, you know, hey, they got zero wins. But you're right about that the very next week after somebody gets fired, usually it's later in the season, like with 3 weeks left or something. It can go one. It's either a train wreck or they fucking stand up and win a game out of nowhere and then go back to sucking. So that's got to play into it too. But yeah, at home, we're only a 4-point favorite. So it's not like we're getting that 3-point favorite with home, because home field isn't really a thing right now as much besides the travel. That's about
it. Points on this one. This is the kind of game it's kind of setting up, like the Buffalo game, the Denver game, you know, two seasons and then one season ago, where Kirk kind of shits his pants at home for one game. This could possibly be that kind of same part of the year, same kind of feel to it. Atlanta should win. Not a great team. So you got to kind of keep your eye out for that as well. And then quickly on the subject that we will save for later, I was really big about maybe the draft pick thing and all that stuff. But then you look at the back half of our schedule, Chris, and there's a lot of winnable games on that. It'd be very hard to lose enough of those games, I think, to get us where we'd like to be draft position wise. But, you know, like you said, there's always trades and stuff, and we'll talk more about that later. But I have to say that I gave up a little bit of hope looking at the back end of that schedule.
It's true. It's very true, considering it's like a below 500 record. So, yeah, that is a very good point. All right. Well, next week, we'd be normally talking it right now, but next week we'll have a short segment at the end of the podcast, per usual, to talk Gopher football. They're returning not this Friday, but next Friday. And it's actually, I got the hiccups all of a sudden, actually, they put it on ABC primetime against Michigan. I'm really looking forward to it. I know my co-host is as well. We'll be back next week. Let's go get a W so we can at least have positives with a win rather than just finding positives for 2021. We're out of here. Enjoy the weekend. Peace.